welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Sunday evening, Valentine's Day. My guests here, I had to find somebody who was not covering a game and didn't have a date for Valentine's Day. No offense to anybody here. I mean, I'm here too. I'm not making a...
Brian knows we've all been married long enough, right? So we don't do anything for Valentine's anymore.
That's Ramona Shelburne joining us from Los Angeles. Hope you're enjoying your Valentine's Day, Ramona.
Oh.
Where I'm at, it's in the negative. It's going to be in the negative for 72 consecutive hours.
My gosh.
So there's no Valentine's in going on here. Joining us from San Francisco, Nick Friedel. Happy Valentine's Day, Nick.
I'm still waiting for Cupid's arrow to strike me out here in San Francisco, B, but we're going to do the best we can.
It's hard during COVID, man.
They got apps for that, right? I mean, Bumble, the lady's a billionaire now, right?
Yeah, the Bumble lady's a billionaire, yeah. And McMahon, who was a very big proponent of Bumble. He wasn't quite as big a proponent as the Clippers.
He wasn't getting paid like the Clippers were.
That's true, but McMahon is now off the app because he's a kept man.
Oh.
And yes, it's not for the podcast. It's fine to leave it in, but McMahon is not available anymore, so he's off the app. I mean, he should have bought some stock in it. He would have done fine. Friedel, you were at the Nets Warriors game last night, but the Nets pretty much controlled from start to finish. More bad news for the Nets. I mean, nobody's going to feel bad for them because, you know, they've got three of the best players in the league. But they just can't get them all on the court. Today, which is our Sunday, you guys will be hearing this Monday, they announced Kevin Durant is going to be out for at least the next two games because of a hamstring injury. So they've only played, I think, seven games with all three of them. And they're 6-1 in those seven games. So, keep that in mind. They had a relatively easy victory in that game. And Nick, they had one of those nights where their offense was just clicking. And you understand when you watch their offense go, you understand what the hype's about, don't you?
Absolutely. And B, then the game ends and Draymond starts talking about the Nets being the favorite in his mind in the East. And offensively, when they are clicking and they're running the way they did on Saturday, and James Harden is setting everybody up the way that he did, and KD shooting the way that KD can, and then, oh, by the way, there's Kyrie to kind of fill in whatever other gaps there are. If that team can learn how to play any defense in the second half, they are going to be miserable for anybody in the East to try to stop in the postseason, because those three dudes have played at the highest level, and Harden seems motivated by at least the attempt to go win a title now. So it's going to be fun to see what happens. But that's the question. Can they play any defense? Because if they do, that offensive firepower is something fierce.
Well, what they look like they're doing, Nick, because I have covered many a Houston Rockets game over the year, okay? And what they look like they're attempting to do defensively is put in that switch everything defense that Houston ran. And, you know, I have a couple of questions about it. One, are they going to have enough practice time or time on the court together? Because, I mean, as you mentioned, Brian, it's seven games so far. It's going to be at least two games that Durant's out with his hamstring. But, you know, I don't think it's going to take long because you have pretty high IQ basketball players out there. You have veterans and you have guys who've done that style of defense. Incidentally, James Harden is actually the one who's pretty good at it. I mean, the Houston Rockets got to a point where they were pretty good at that switch everything defense. So I think that the longer they play together, the more they put that in there. I think they'll be just good enough defensively. I think that's my thought about the Nets is they don't have to be great defensively. They just have to be just good enough because their offense is so damn good that it might not matter.
So a couple of days ago, the New Orleans Pelicans, who I'm going to check on, they're playing right now, but I'm going to check on in a minute. The New Orleans Pelicans played a game where they shot 54% from the field. Okay.
As a team.
That was a game.
Okay.
As a team. That was a game that Zion went, I can't remember if it was 15 of 16 or 14 of 15. I think it was 15 of 16, okay? They scored 130 points. And they lost by 13 or 14 to the Mavericks. And the Mavericks obviously have not had a good defense this year. And this is something that has been going on during this season. Teams that they're giving up 50-some% shooting and they're winning.
Mm-hmm.
And so my friend Paul Hembo, Crazy Hembo from the morning show, you know, get up if you ever watch that. I was communicating with him about it. He looked at some numbers, guys, and I don't know if this is going to hold. By the way, the Pelicans are getting blown out by the Pistons right now. They're going to lose by double digits because they're giving up, even though they're shooting like 48% themselves, they're giving up 55% shooting.
Woof.
And my point is, like, and this comes back to the Nets. Do you, in 2021, I mentioned this on the pod briefly in passing a couple of weeks ago, and so you could tell if you're a regular listener, I've been thinking about this. Do you really have to play good defense in 2021 to win? Because here's the thing. So this is what Hembo looked up for me. So far this year, and granted, we are only, you know, roughly a third of the way through. It may not hold. Losing teams in the NBA this year have an effective field goal percentage of over 50%, 51%. Wow. Actually, 50.5%. So that, you know, effective, that means, you know, including the three-pointers. And even overall, the losing teams are shooting 44%, which 44%, that used to be a winning number. That's what the average of losing teams is scoring. It's the highest ever. And just to go back and, you know, by comparison, you know, back in like 2005-06, when the NBA was sort of at its offensive, you know, nadir or whatever, losing teams' effective field goal percentage was like in the low 40s. So, you know, basically, if you had a game where you shot 42%, that was like the dividing line that you lost. That's what you'd want to hold your opponents like 42-43%. That was pretty much the break-even point. Now you can give up 50-some% shooting and still win games. And so my question is, do you have to be a good defensive team anymore? Can, you know, because Draymond Green doesn't toss around compliments, right? That's not something that he's going to just do just to make nice. That's not who he is, yeah. Right? So for him to say he thinks they're going to win the East, he's saying that being very fully aware of what their defensive challenges are. He's saying that because he's so blown away by how awesome their offense are. And, like, I don't want to be a stick in the mud. I'm on the wrong side of 40, okay? I don't want to be that guy. I'm going to be that guy anyway because that's just who I am. But I don't want to be the guy who's like, back in my day, you know, you had to get a stop to win a game. We won games 2-0. You know, we couldn't make a shot, but we didn't let the other team make a shot. And that's just not the way the league is being played this year. And here's something else he dug up. Just in the month of February, okay, not this season, in the month of February, 6 different teams, and I don't even know if this includes this weekend because he sent this to me on Friday. 6 different teams, the Rockets, Jazz, Pacers, Bulls, Grizzlies, and Mavericks, have broken their franchise records for three-pointers made.
Wow.
6 teams. So he sent this to me Friday. So 6 teams in 12 days set franchise records in three-point shooting. So, Ramona, like, is this just the nature of where we are and that it'll, you know, because we always know the playoffs are different and it will matter? Or does defense, is this really transitioning away from a league where you have to get stops, where it's just, you're going to outgun and you can win?
You know, Brian, when you told me you wanted to talk about this today, my initial reaction to it was, of course, defense still matters. Look at who won the championship last year, 2 teams who were pretty good defensively. Right, who are in the finals, and the Lakers had a really good defense. And I think maybe in the regular season it doesn't matter as much, but I still think in the playoffs it will. But I decided to go check with some of my people, right? You just text all your people who have good perspectives around the league. And I really think this is situational. I don't know if this is I don't know if this is going to be like this all year. I don't know if it's going to be like this, you know, even come playoff time. This everybody I hit today asking that exact question had the same response, which is this is a function of 2021 where teams do not get to practice very much. They rarely have shoot arounds. They rarely have any time to like make adjustments from game to game. Even when you're playing the same team twice, when you do the back-to-back scheduling, there's just not a lot of adjustments being made. And the teams that are playing fairly well defensively, I would guess the Jazz are probably near the top of that list. Those are teams that have played together for a while. The Lakers, you know, they have some new players, and I don't think they've been as good defensively as they were last year. Sometimes it's a little bit game to game whether or not AD plays or some of their guys, but they're still incorporating new guys. But I really think this is situational. I don't think people have given up on the concept. I just think in a year when you don't have time to work on things, and another thought somebody brought up, which I thought was interesting, is the lack of fans. In a way, helps role players, right? Okay, because you're on the road, like you go to play a tough crowd, right? Where do you think the toughest crowd in the league is? Denver, maybe, you know, with the
crowd. There's a lot of places.
There's a lot of tough places, right? Well, there's no crowds, and so when your role players are on the court, you know, wherever a tough opposing crowd is, you don't have all that extra pressure, all that crowd noise, all that gives the home court advantage. And so I think you're just seeing three or four things come together to create this situation. And it's colliding with this trend of shooting more threes and offense being, it being officiated differently, right? Everything's called tighter. So I think it's situational to 2021 based on the very unique circumstances of pandemic NBA basketball. And also,
That's a fair point. But,
yeah.
But we're going to play for the title in 2021.
True. Yeah. Theoretically.
I mean, if that's the way it's going now, what's to say that won't be the way it's going? I mean, I guess we'll maybe get fans in later, but.
Yeah, maybe later, maybe a little bit. Right. But I do think over the course of a season when you're just going to have to play your way into defensive schemes, right? You're going to have to learn on the court. I remember, you know, I was listening to De'Aaron Fox the other day. He was on Zach Lowe's podcast, and he, you know, and the Kings went on their little run over the past, I don't know, I guess 3-4 weeks. He kind of traced it back to these two games that they had scheduled against the Grizzlies. And he said, you know, we actually got to practice because the games against the Grizzlies got canceled, and they had two, you know, just postponements. And they, instead of just being home, they had two practice days. And he goes, that was really a big deal for us because we got to work on our defense and our schemes. And, you know, everybody I talk to these days says this is a much bigger thing of not being able to practice or make adjustments or install things at like you normally would. And so maybe just over the course of the season, teams play their way into it.
And B, I agree with everything Ramona just outlined. I think that so much of what we've seen is a function of the world that we're all living in. But I'm still on the good side of 40. I'm 37 years old.
Yeah, but you covered Tibbs for all those years.
Exactly. I covered Tibbs for all those years. I grew up in Orlando as a proud Shaq and Penny Magic fan. I saw the 90s Knicks. I saw the Pacers and the Davis brothers. I got to be honest here. I watch these games right now, and it's just not that interesting when nobody's playing defense. Mm-hmm. This is like the Oprahification of the NBA.
Yeah, but you're there watching Steph put up these numbers. You're saying that's not fun?
Steph is fun, and thank God that I am covering the Warriors right now because Steph makes the NBA so much more watchable. It is an awesome experience being in there with 100 people at Chase Center and watching him race up and down the floor and knock shots down from all over the place. It's awesome. I'm saying in general, I come home, I flip on the TV, watch whatever game's going on, and I'm sitting there going, are you kidding me? Truly, it's like, you get a basket, you get a basket, you get a basket. Nobody's playing defense on the whole. And as somebody who grew up,
Boy, you sound like an old fart here.
Yeah, you kind of do.
Yeah, and as somebody who grew up watching the games, I grew to love the NBA in those 90s years when everything was a battle, and certainly the games evolved from that point. But my point is I watch these games, and they have the intensity of an all-star game. And it is, I'm really struggling night to night to get into what I'm seeing, because it just feels like, and part of it is exactly what Ramona just said. You've got players not being able to practice. You've got no fans in the stands. And I think that helps with accountability and intensity mm-hmm. of guys wanting to give maximum effort. But when you're watching this, and there's just not that real excitement about playing any defense whatsoever. As a longtime fan of the league, I'm watching this year's games. I'm going, oh, come on. I can see this in the All-Star game. I don't need to see this on a Tuesday in February.
Yeah. So I'm not really, like, looking for the state of the league. I'm more looking at, like, the state of, like, you know, how to evaluate these teams.
Right.
You know? I mean, like, I understand what you're saying, and this is absolutely a taste thing. There is absolutely no doubt that the 3-point shooting, the volume of 3-point shooting, even though watching people make it and put up these numbers, I think is enjoyable. I think it's fun that a game can go from 18 to 2. You know, a lead can go from 18 to 2, and that there's always, you know, you're always still in the game because of it. But I certainly recognize that some people don't like that style, and maybe the league has gotten too lopsided in that direction. I think Popovich first voiced that about 2 years ago. He said this is a little out of control. And I get all that, but I'm more interested, like, in, you know, can a team do this? Can a team be as bad as some of these teams are on defense and win two or three or four rounds of the playoffs?
Well, Brian, you know, about 7 years ago now, is it 6 years maybe? Let's see, all my math is. There was a question, can a jump shooting team win a championship? I think Charles asked that question, right? And it was a knock on the Warriors all the way through their dynasty. And yep. I think they won three of them. Right. I mean, now they also had a hell of a defense, right? You know, that the Warriors defense, I think, was vastly underrated, you know, at the time, because we were all so focused on how good Steph and Clay were at shooting. And then
when, top five defense year after year.
I think there was 1 year maybe they weren't. I feel like maybe the year they didn't win, that was a tough year. But that was the year everybody was kind of over it. Right. Everybody was just sick of everything. But there was 1 year in there they weren't. But most of those years, they had a great defense. And you have to give a lot of credit to Draymond and to Clay for that. But also schematically, you know, with Ron Adams and Jaren Collins running that defense and what they do. But I just think, like, yeah, you're right. Like, we have had norms. We've had those things that we used to think about basketball. A jump shooting team, that's not going to translate to the playoffs. Not going to make all those threes in the playoffs. Oh, you're relying on the fast break? Oh, it's a half-court game in the playoffs. Well, that didn't hold up. And it really didn't hold up with the Warriors. So I do think a team that doesn't play great defense can win. But I do think, but I'm not ready to say we are in an era of no defense now. I think I can't separate the situational stuff of this year. You know, another scout I hit on this question, Brian, had a different theory too, which is a lot of the bad teams this year, they can score. They just don't play defense. So you're seeing a lot of these scores where, I mean, last year it was just the Wizards, right? We were always like, oh, God. So-and-so had a career high. Did they play the Wizards, right? I mean, that was like this year, I think there's a lot of bad teams who can all score. They just don't play defense. So there's you're sort of feasting on a bunch of very, very, you know, easy pickings here.
And I absolutely think the answer to the question is no. I don't think a team can be so dynamic offensively yet that it can overcome a lack of playing defense at a high level. And Ramona, you brought this up with the postseason. If a team can go all the way through the postseason and win this way, I'll believe it when I see it. But I've watched way too many playoff games through the years, and we all know that there's a different level that is hit during those games. And I think that level always makes the best teams rise from the rest of the pack on the defensive end. But I'm just so intrigued because you mentioned Charles and something he said. Part of the reason I feel as strongly as I do about the product as a whole is because I was listening to Charles on Friday, and he was on with my friends Waddle and Sylvie in Chicago on ESPN 1000, and he's saying the basketball just isn't very good right now. And yeah. As always, he's honest. And I'm sitting there going, yeah, like that's exactly the way I feel about the game, watching these offenses that are so talented, but I feel like such a focus of the game has been defense for so long, and it's just gone missing, and it's really changed the way I'm watching night to night.
So there's this guy, I don't know what his job is. Maybe I'm a fool. I just follow him on Twitter. His name is Ed Kupfer, and at Ed Kupfer, and he just puts out these high-end statistical analyses.
Yeah.
You're talking about guys getting their highs, getting their season highs. So he has a chart that shows which teams gave up season highs to the other players by position. So this year, the Dallas Mavericks, who I just mentioned, gave up 140 the other night and won by 13. The Dallas Mavericks have given up seven different shooting guards have had their season high against the Mavericks, five different small forwards, five different power forwards, and four different centers.
Mm.
So everybody has done really well.
Yeah. Well, but okay, so here's my point about this year. The Dallas Mavericks has been devastated by COVID. I mean, like that was one of the teams that I think you would say they had a lot of guys out for an extended period of time, and even the ones who have come back have had long-term issues, right? I mean, I was just reading Tim McMahon writing about Maxi Kleber, and you know, he still feels sluggish, right, out there after having COVID. I mean, I don't think we can underestimate the effect of that on players right now, but also just on the league as a whole. I mean, when you don't make adjustments, when you don't have practice, that's always like the fun part of playoff series, is watching adjustments from game to game. And they're not always made at practice. Sometimes they're made in film sessions or whatever, but even film sessions now are different. Like you know, with all the distancing and you know, you got to stay in your room in different areas of the country. You can't gather.
Everything you're saying makes sense, yeah. But you know, you also, if you're a good team,
yep,
you have to take some, you have to build some habits. By the way, your Orlando Magic, for you, 9 power forwards have had season highs against the Magic, and 8 small shooting guards have had season highs against the Magic. And Milwaukee, 8 point guards. This would be good for bettors.
You know, yeah.
8 point guards have had their season high against Milwaukee this year. It's crazy. You know which team has given up the fewest number of opposing teams, players having their season highs? I mean, you make 12 guesses.
And then we won't get it. Right? I mean, I would have guessed the Jazz, right? Well, let's think.
I'll look at that in a second.
Okay.
The Jazz have only had, only about 9 guys have done it against the Jazz in total.
Okay. Okay, so you said because it's going to be a hard team to guess. Yeah. Let's pick
Ramona,
somebody.
Ramona, just
weird.
Think. I mean, this team's got a winning record and they've got a good record, but you won't get it. There's no way you'll get it. There's no way you'll get it.
I'm going to get it. I'm going to say the Raptors.
You're not. No, they're not even close.
I'm just trying to pick an unlikely thing. How about the Celtics? What if I guess all 30 teams? I'm eventually going to get it.
The Celtics have the second fewest.
Okay.
That's a good guess.
Yeah.
Friedel, do you even want to make
Are we East Coast, Eastern Conference, or Western Conference?
Western Conference.
Oh, okay. Well, then it would have saved me 2 guesses.
Now I'm curious.
Now you're 1 out of 15 here. No, actually, 2 out of 1 out of 14.
Phoenix Suns.
Really? Okay, I definitely would have got that.
The fewest, and this could be a bit of an anomaly.
Okay.
Anyway, Ed also tells us that every single team is shooting over 33% from 3-point range.
Are you serious?
And that's never happened this deep into a season.
Wow.
Wow.
And there's 9 teams shooting over 38%.
Mm. Well, you know what's interesting about this? The more you're saying, so this has evolved because the teams that have, you know, as a reaction to the Warriors, and if you want to go all the way back to the Heat and the Spurs and stuff during their runs too. But what happens is one team does it, has success, everybody copies that, and then there's got to be some new advantage that you have to exploit. So maybe that's something different. Maybe that when everybody can do it, it's no longer as much of an advantage.
That's true. You're looking for the edge, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, but you know, just look, I know that there's just a lot of 3-point shooting happening, but the percentages are better than they've ever been. So like, you know, the math, I mean, those are, I just talked about how, even the losing teams are effective field goal percentages over 50%. Mm-hmm. Well, every single team's shooting at least 33% on threes, which means it's like shooting 50%. No wonder they're all rising.
The other thing play defense. Somebody out there, please.
Well, the Jazz are playing defense, and they've won 17-18. But
can't we get more than one team? Can we get like
the Lakers?
Five
sometimes
or six
do.
Teams?
Sometimes.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket. With Vivid Seat Rewards, score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup. Blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So the other thing, it's interesting from the from Brooklyn from last night, Nick, is that after the game, and as far as I could tell, this was just sort of flippantly thrown in there because Harden had he had 16 assists in that game, only took 11 shots, only went to the free throw line twice, which is not the guy he's been for the last 7-8 years. Kyrie just was like, a couple days ago, I just decided, I just went up to James and we decided he'd be the point guard.
That was so great. That was one of my favorite post game revelations in a while. That was great.
I'm not going to get on Steve Nash. By the way, my favorite post game revelation of all time was when Nick was there for it. Was when in the playoff game where LeBron hit the buzzer beating 3-pointer and game 4 with 2-1 in Chicago. The Bulls were about to go up 3-1, and LeBron hits the game winner. And after the game, it gets brought up that LeBron changed the play, and LeBron was like, yeah, that last play, I scratched it. Like, he just took David Blatt.
Totally.
Just rolled him completely
under
the bus.
Under the bus isn't even a good enough.
That was a hip check. That was a hip check.
Yeah, oh, my God. He threw him out the
I remember that.
He's like, that last play, and he even like paused for dramatic effect. That last play, I scratched it. All right. So,
well, let me say this though. Can we just take like 30 seconds? Because we all spent so much time talking about James Harden when he was in Houston and wanting out of Houston and yada. And he took a lot of criticism. But I mean, I watched that game last night, Nick, and I knew James Harden was a great passer. But there was like 3 or 4 passes in that game that were just beautiful, right? Like these little slip passes, hell yeah, he should be the point guard. I mean, I think we all knew he was going to do that anyway, but the way he's embraced it, but also just he makes passing look fun and exciting. I mean, there's not very much about James Harden's game that I go, you know, like he's not an electric dunker or athlete or anything, you know, foul shooting isn't exactly exciting, right? But hell, oh my God, he's a great passer. There was 4 of those in that last night's game that made me want to see the replay.
And when you have these star teams, as we well know, having seen what's gone on, Ramon, you mentioned the Heat and the Warriors, when everybody knows their roles, when they feel comfortable in what they're supposed to be doing, that's when they can really hit their stride. So in that regard, as funny as Kyrie's quote was, I think it was important because it was like, okay, James, you're setting up the offense, and Kevin, you're going to do your thing, hitting shots from all over the place, and Kyrie can just float around and score when he feels necessary. But I think that part of knowing where everybody is supposed to be is crucial for any team that's trying to come together this quickly like this.
Now, look, I know that they're different players, but this is essentially the way LeBron played in Cleveland.
Yeah.
That Kyrie wanted the hell away from.
Now, yeah. Look,
that was years ago. Kyrie's making the best of his decision. It also equally reminds me of when, during their second year together, Wade went to LeBron in Miami and was like, look. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't about running the point in that case. It was more about being the lead dog. Wade was like, listen, you got to step forward. You know, you got to take this thing. And LeBron did and started winning MVPs again. So on some level, it's mature. And the fact that Kyrie's doing it pretty quickly, I felt from day one, I remember watching Harden play his first games for the Nets. They played two games in Cleveland right out of the gate. And I couldn't believe how Harden came into that team like a lamb. And Kyrie had just come back from his hiatus, whatever you want to call it, and he totally yielded to Kyrie. I think Harden has played this beautifully. He's let Kyrie come around to the way it needs to be. So on one hand, I praise Kyrie for recognizing what is probably the best way for them to play. On the other hand, I question whether Kyrie, who changes his mind every 20 minutes or less, whether that's going to stick, because this is the exact type of scenario, not wanting to be the second dog, and in this case, potentially the third dog, that drove him out of Cleveland. So I think it's good. It's fine. I just wonder if it'll last. I don't know if it'll last.
Well, it was important, Brian, that Kyrie was the one to tell us that they had had this conversation. I mean, it came from him. In other words, James didn't say that to him. Steve Nash didn't say that to him. Mike D'Antoni didn't say that to him. And said
they
it.
Might have, but.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, you're right.
Okay. Well, in the retelling of it, I actually do think it's important. It's like, look, this is a million years ago that I lived in this world, but do you remember when it was like a big deal when you changed your Facebook relationship status, right? You know, you went from, you know, Ramona Shelburne is in a relationship. Like that was, right? Okay. And you can't put your in a relationship.
Wait a minute. You've been with your husband for decades.
I know.
You didn't even. Was that pre-Facebook?
I think we're pre-Facebook. But I'm just saying, I remember that was a big deal, right? Like to announce. You watch people's relationships. They would always develop over time. First, you'd start seeing them in pictures together. Then they'd start tagging each other. Same thing on Instagram, right? But Facebook was even more important because they had these actual statuses that said, you know, in a relationship with, and then got engaged to.
In the Facebook movie, that was one of the key things.
Huge.
That he put on there, you know, are you available?
You know, basically what the point was. I mean, Kyrie told us I am the shooting guard. James is the point guard. Kyrie made that announcement. That's a big deal.
You can tell with Ramona, she's already thinking about how she's going to write this story.
I love it. I love it.
When's the last time we've had Facebook relationship updates on the Hoop Collective, Brian?
I'm remembering how pissed off my ex-girlfriend from college was.
Yeah.
We got into a fight and it went from in a relationship with to I scratched it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she was not happy.
And there's
with
an untangling too. You start untagging them, right?
Right.
Untagging them from all your photos.
Not a good moment in time.
I once had I'm gonna say something. This is completely off topic, but it's really funny. So there was a girl I went to high school with, and I remember I was checking up, you know, just a friend from high school. She was married to somebody, and then I didn't see anything on Facebook for a while, and then I see all of a sudden she's married to another guy. And I was like, wait, is that – I didn't get the part where you got unmarried and then you were in a relationship with – like it was like a divorce, remarriage, boom. I didn't see anything in between. And it was just very jarring for me there.
There's some gaps.
Yeah.
all right, so – you know, by the way, along those lines, remember that All-Star game in Charlotte where Kyrie and Durant basically got engaged?
Oh, yeah.
That would have been Facebook official.
Yeah.
Even though they got angry saying it. They would have been Facebook official that week.
Draymond would have gotten really heated on that wall.
You're right about that. All right, so the Nets continue to be one of the most compelling stories in the league. We'll keep an eye on them. We'll see if they start defending. Starting to become a story, they lost their 7th out of 10 games today and fell to .500. a very disappointing loss for the Boston Celtics to the Washington Wizards today. Game wasn't even really that close. And they are really scuffling. Now, I have to point out that Marcus Smart's been out for a couple of weeks. He's pretty much missed most of this 10-game stretch. He has a calf injury. He's obviously a very important player to them. Jason Tatum was out. Jaylen Brown was out. Kemba has been coming back from the knee issue and has had just a couple of dreadful games. I think he's had two games where he went 1-for-12. And another couple of games where it was almost as bad. But the Celtics, you know, wasn't that long ago. They were first in the East.
Yeah.
And, you know, so today after the game, Kemba Walker, I don't know if he's calling out his teammates by saying this, but he's certainly making a statement when he said, we need to play harder. We're not playing hard. And it's sort of a catch-all that you sometimes hear in the NBA. We got to play harder. Sometimes it's something somebody says when they don't have schematic answers. But this is not something that a guy like, you know, Kemba's usually a pretty positive guy. And so 13-13. Nick, how worried should we be about the Celtics?
Very. And B, I can feel our boy Timmy Bontemps running around screaming at us going, I told you so. I told you this team wasn't that good because he's trying to say the same message all along. But when you watch them, they just look disconnected. That defense does not look the way that it's supposed to. And they don't have the feel of a team that was right on the cusp of getting to the finals last year. And, guys, when you start hearing players, and be the point about Kemba's well taken, Kemba's not a guy who's rocking the boat. He generally has an optimistic outlook on what's going on. But when you start hearing, hey, we've got to play harder, I don't think there are too many bigger red flags for talented groups. When you start hearing that, there are usually a lot deeper issues behind the surface that will come out. And when you have a team that thought it would be going to be really good and they're mediocre like this, when does it turn where they all start playing harder and things get a lot better? Because off the top of my head, I don't feel like you see that kind of example much in the league.
Well, you know when it turns is when Marcus Smart comes back because he plays hard every single second, right? I mean,
that's true.
I think the cumulative effect of him being out this long is starting to be felt. And plus, I got a stat for you, Brian, all right? Jason Tatum, in the last four first quarters, has scored 6 points, okay? 6 points in the last four first quarters.
Combined?
Yeah, okay? I mean, you got to get him some shots. You got to get your best player rolling. And I think this gets to the other issue with the Celtics, which is who is their best player? Okay, I mean, you know, I was filling out my All-Star ballot. I really want to vote for Jaylen Brown. But I don't know, this latest swoon is making me rethink things, right? I mean, it's a tough call on the second guard there. Is it then Tatum? I was looking at him, but I don't know if the East front court is kind of tough for him to crack that starting lineup, right? But, you know, I don't know. Who's their best player? What are their roles? Is Kemba their leader? Is he their best player? He doesn't play back-to-back. I mean,
Tatum is their most talented player.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Jaylen is their best two-way player.
And he's had the best season so far.
Marcus is their best defender.
Mm-hmm.
And Kemba is their, you know, he's like their spark plug. I mean, you know, I think you're making a good point. Tatum was awful today, 3-of-14, yep. Only played 23 minutes. You know, the thing that you look at them is, you know, they lost Gordon Hayward, and they were already kind of a thin team, you know, they kind of had six guys.
Yeah.
They lost Hayward, and they just didn't do anything really. They weren't effectively able to replace him. You know, they signed Jeff Teague, and Teague has been so bad that he's not out of the rotation. And they're now all of a sudden, like, they're like relying on Peyton Pritchard, who's had a really late first round pick out of Oregon. He's had a really good start. You know, one of a nice, he's had, you know, a handful of games where he's really made a difference for them. And then today they played their other first-round pick, Aaron Nesmith. He played 30 minutes today. So they're like relying on rookies. I know Nesmith hasn't played that much, but they're like leaning on rookies to try. I mean, by the way, they're not leaning on LaMelo Ball. They're leaning on, you know, guy was picked 26, I think, 26 or 27th, which is where Pritchard was taken. Like, they're just really thin. And, you know, they could have signed and traded Gordon Hayward to Indiana, but they just didn't like the package. They were going to come back, and they just couldn't agree to it. And I think large part of it was they just didn't want Miles Turner, and they signed Tristan Thompson instead. But the other thing is, like, this team, they don't do midseason trades almost ever. I think the last midseason trade they did was Isaiah Thomas when they traded for him. They made a couple of trades that day, but I want to say that was 2015, maybe 2014 or 15. I think it was 2015. They don't typically do in-season trades, but I'm going to say that they have a $28 million trade exception. And they have their first round pick, which, you know, you got to be careful trading this year's first round pick because this is a good class. You want to protect it, but you have those two weapons at your disposal. And I think the Celtics really have to examine, going out and getting some help. I don't think it's got to be a star. They have front end stars. They just don't have, you know, guys that can help them, you know, guys that can defend, guys that can, you know, a Jay Crowder type player. They need that type of player. I know that they had some discussions with the Pelicans for J.J. Redick. Redick wants to play in the Northeast. They had some discussions about it. They could take J.J. into that trade exception, but I'm not sure he's exactly the type of player they need. I think they need, you know, more versatile two-way players. But specifically, I think they need another forward.
I've got a name for you that I think would fit there. PJ Tucker.
Oh,
he'd be
interesting. Good name.
Yeah.
He'd yeah. I think he gets traded this year at some point. You know, last year, the DL, he wants an extension, and it's probably not going to be in Houston. You know, Boston, how many first round picks do they have available? Like, I think that gets it done.
Yeah, I mean, it's just really a matter of whether you give a first round pick for renting PJ Tucker,
right.
Unless you want to rent him. But I think that's the type of player that they need. I mean, PJ Tucker is kind of like a bigger Marcus Smart. He's a couple inches taller, but they're very similar players.
No, it's a good comparison. Yeah.
Yeah. But just 13-13, that's just that's not going to get done. They did have a nice win over Toronto earlier this week, which kind of was something that they needed to do to uplift. And they're hanging on to fifth place. It's not like they're sliding down the rankings. The East is a lot of parity in the East after the top four.
Well, I mean, you know, you brought up the Dwayne Wade and LeBron thing, right? You know, at one point, D Wade just went, "Hey, you got to take this over," right? And I think, to me, it's always been there. You know, it's Jason and Jaylen are their two young stars. I don't know if we have to pick between them, but I know that your best player can't be not getting enough shot attempts early on. You got to get your best players going. And I think if you look at this recent swoon, you know, I don't know if it's health related with Jason or not, or if it's just they're not running enough plays for him. Maybe it's, you know, other Kemba's not getting him the ball or whatever it is. I don't know. I haven't watched it enough, but I know he has not gotten involved early. And when you don't get involved early, you know, and you're the best player on the team, you should be leading them every night. It's a problem.
Yeah. I've sort of felt, you know, for 2 years now, they're going to go as far as Jason Tatum can take them. That's probably true. Having said that, I think Jaylen Brown's been awesome. He's been one of the best players in the league this year. So, but it's not working right now. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, one thing I want to talk about before we go. The New York Knicks made a trade a week ago, trading for Derrick Rose.
Is this why you had Fridell on the pod today? there it is.
The Knicks have won two in a row. They're 5-5 in their last 10. They have a favorable schedule coming up, and they're in seventh place in the Eastern Conference. And when they traded for Derrick Rose, Nick, I thought, I don't know. I mean, the Knicks should be tanking this year. You know, they should be, you know, there's nobody in Madison Square Garden to boo Jim Dolan. There's these players in the draft that can help them. You know, they're not going to be competitive in the East for the most part. But playing for Tibbs has got him scratching and crawling. And we now have two former Bulls / Timberwolves in Taj Gibson and Derrick Rose, and he's gotten them. You know, they trade for Derrick Rose, and I'm like, isn't this going to take time away from Emmanuel Quickley, who's one of the best stories in the league? Another guy, by the way, taken in the 20s, who's having an impact this year. He's been the brightest spot on the Knicks this year, and I'm like, isn't he going to take minutes away from him? And, you know, but they just can't help themselves. Tibbs wants to make the playoffs, and they're obviously doing this. You know, I mean, there's no doubt that they did this for Tibbs. And I will say it's only been three games, but Quickley and Rose have been playing. Tibbs has been playing them together, and they've played well together. And I don't know if, again, you know, I'm a little bit more clinical with this. I think just in general that the lane for a tanking team is wide open this year. There's nobody tanking. The two worst teams in the league have been Detroit and Minnesota, although Cleveland is fast heading towards the bottom. Or Detroit and Minnesota, and they didn't try to tank. They just were worse than they thought they would be. All these teams, you know, in past years, you've had five or six teams tanking. There's nobody tanking this year. The lane is wide open to tank, to get in on some of these high draft picks, and the Knicks will not do it, Friedel.
Because Tom Thibodeau is Tom Thibodeau. That's the answer. I mean, there was no way that guy, finally as coach of the New York Knicks, a team that he's always had a ton of respect for and he obviously worked for years, there was no way in New York City, given this chance, that Tom was going to tank. It just was not ever going
to
happen.
It's not well, up
but,
to him.
But it is night to night. The Bulls went through this. Garn Pax did. They traded Luol Deng. It was like, all right, let's just tank away this thing. And right. Tom was like, that's not going to happen.
Give me Nate Robinson. I'll get him.
I took this team to the playoffs with Nate Bleeping Robinson. I mean, look at the track record he has. This team is not going to tank. He will not ever let it happen.
Look, if you're the Knicks, you could say, look, we're going to trade Julius Randle. We're going to trade Elfrid Payton. We're gonna force him to play RJ Barrett and Quickley and Obi Toppin. And we're going to force him to play these guys. They could do that. And just say, Tom, just do your best with this, and then by next year we'll have another high draft pick, and we'll go. But they're not. They're Leon Rose, the team president, is yielding to. They're giving in to Tibbs because they got Taj Gibson. And they got,
can I have a word for the defense? Okay,
let's go.
Can I represent the defendant? I like it. I don't like tanking. It's one of those things where if nobody is really out and out tanking yet, okay, and even teams that really should tank are not tanking, this is a great draft. This is one of the best drafts coming up, we think, okay? There's five or maybe even eight guys that could vie for number one pick. I think there's probably really just five, but even of those five, those are five potential number one picks who all would have gone number one this year. They're all really good. I've studied a little bit of the draft because I did a story.
Kevin said that LaMelo is looking pretty damn
good. Yeah, LaMelo is looking really good. That Mike Schmitz guy, the Gavoni guy, they're pretty good, huh? They were saying that about LaMelo.
Gavoni was beating that drum for a long time. I know. All right, good.
So, no, but, the two guys in the Ignite team are really good. Jonathan Kuminga and Jalen Green are really good.
Yeah, you just wrote a piece on Jalen Green.
On Jalen Green. And by the way, Jonathan Kuminga, I'll probably write about him next because I think he's got that Jaylen Brown quality. He's a great two-way player. I think somebody could fall in love with him and take him at number one, too. And then there's the three college guys, Jalen Suggs, Kate Cunningham, and Evan Mobley, right? Depends on.
I had a guy who I respect compare Jalen Suggs to Jason Kidd this week.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. Okay. I mean, look, this is a great draft. There's five really good players there. If nobody's out and out tanking, and we have the different lottery rules now where it's, it's not that much of an advantage to have the worst record in the league. I mean, you could very easily go from the number five spot to the number one spot in the lottery these days, or much, much easier than before. I mean, I think I don't mind this for New York at all. I think it's important to get players in there that your coach has had success with, that teach the young guys how to play the right way. I mean, that was, if we're all going to, get on Sam Hinkie for the way that he tore down the Sixers to sort of build them back up and tank, but also kind of, if you... I don't want to put this on Sam, but I think it ruined the careers of a few younger players who got drafted high when there's no good veterans around there, and there wasn't veterans to coach those guys up and teach them the right way. I mean, that's a really important part of it. You have to have good veterans that know how the coach likes to play, that know how to run the system, that teach you how to be professionals. Look, Taj Gibson's one of the best vets in the league. He'll always have a job for as long as he wants to play. He's a great veteran presence in the clubhouse. I don't mind them getting Derrick Rose here. If they make the playoffs, okay, it hurts them in this draft, but this is a pretty deep... If there's five players, there's the next three or four are pretty damn good too. So I don't hate this for them.
What former Bull is he going to get next?
Well, Noah's retired. Who'd you say?
Joakim's ears are burning.
Yeah.
Joakim and Luol are sitting there going, all right,
Yeah.
Joakim and Luol still both getting paid, by the way.
Yeah. Look. Oh, yeah. Look, they're both rested. They've had a lot of rest.
They're ready for 10 or 12 minutes right off the bat.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for Jimmy Butler, him to call Miami.
Oh my God. Wow. what a reunion that would be. But I think this is important while we're on this. And Ramona brought up having veterans, and Taj is so well respected. But guys, who is one of the most beloved NBA players by other NBA players out there? To me, it's Derrick Rose.
Oh, Derrick Rose is beloved in general. Derrick Rose is beloved by fans.
Derrick Rose is beloved by fans, but he is beloved by NBA players because they see his story as a reality check for their own. Mm-hmm. And having talked to enough guys about Derrick through the years, they love the fact that Derrick has gone through what he's gone through and come out the other side. And I say that because not only do I think that Derrick's transitioned well into this next phase of his career as the veteran guy who can still play a little bit on a roster, I say that because the younger guys, so many younger guys you talk to say, who did you look up to coming into the league? And so many guys say D. Rose, because he was so awesome to watch when he was healthy. And he was playing at the level he was early in that Tibbs tenure.
But wouldn't recruit.
Chicago. But he didn't want to recruit. But I think his tone has changed a little bit over time. But I think it is crucial in the discussion to acknowledge that not only is Derrick beloved by fans still and players, that younger generation watched him play. And they are all excited about the opportunity to play with him now at their stage of their own careers.
Here's the thing I'm going to say. Starting when Derrick kind of reignited his career, which was in his last go around with the Knicks, then he went to the Cavs, then he went to the Wolves, then he went to the Pistons. Am I missing any stops there?
Man, I forgot about a couple of those. I was like, that's right. Even when was that Cleveland era. Yeah, okay.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That was, there was a – it was about 15 minutes where the Cavs had LeBron, Rose, Wade, Love.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
You remember all that?
Yeah.
It didn't go well. LeBron broke up with Derrick Rose twice. I mean, LeBron broke up with Dwayne Wade twice in his career. Let's let that be known. I think Dwayne was happy to go back to Miami. It was the right thing to do, but it was like, you know, we're done here. All of those stops, and a couple of them where he's, you know, that night when he scored 50 for the Wolves was a very special night. But all those stops, and, you know, I'm not talking about his numbers, and I'm not talking about his, you know, just the way he's looked on the court. But he's been a losing player. You know, the reason he's been a journeyman is that his teams have not performed well with him on the court. Look at his plus minus. Mm-hmm. And so it's strange with him because you watch him play and he's exciting to watch play. You know, obviously he's a bit of a charismatic guy because of his game, not because of his personality at all. But he does have a way. Well, you're right. He does have a way of drawing people into him. But he's not been successful as a player, even with good numbers. And so, you know, I did talk to one scout who said this could be a genius move because getting Derek makes Tibbs happy, gives the appearance they're trying to win, but Derek's teams don't win. And just seriously, go back and look at the teams. And I'm not saying it's all his fault. It's not his fault that the Pistons are not good. The Pistons roster is a train wreck. But just go back and look.
Okay, I'm going to give you a little tidbit. Only a little tidbit, okay? I don't believe that Derrick Rose is a losing player. I know what you're saying. I think in the right role, in the right system, like he's on a winning team.
He's not a losing player, but his teams don't perform well when he's on.
Okay, last year, before, you know, when he was with us, right? Okay, before the helicopter crash. Okay, that was the only time I have ever heard, and I'm sure it happened more than I ever heard about, but this was the only time I ever heard Kobe make a little suggestion to the Lakers brass. He loved the idea of the Lakers trading for Derrick Rose or going to get him somehow, right? I mean, that was and that was a team that was poised to win the championship and then did, okay? And look, you want to go back to MVP races and who has, you know, some hurt feelings over who might have won that when Rose won that year, okay? There was no personal feeling there at all. Kobe, when he weighed in on that one, he really thought he could be a great contributor and player on a winning team.
Well, Pelinka was trying to get him in L.A. from almost the time he got the job.
Yeah.
You know, and like, look, had they been able to, I know that they tried to trade for him last year.
Yeah.
And Detroit just didn't want to trade him. Pelinka tried.
I know he did. I mean, and they talked about it a lot. I mean, that was I think he hasn't been on good teams, but name me a really good team where he was put there and he made them lose. Right.
I'm just saying, like he's a journeyman at this point.
Yeah. Okay. Fair, that's fair.
You know, I mean, like, and I'm not saying that to insult him. And I want to be clear. I do not think he's a losing player because there are guys out there who I think are losing players who just do not contribute to winning. But the way Derek plays, just go look at his plus minus. It you know, and I know that that's a circumstantial stat that depends on his all kinds of other factors, but his teams have not performed well with him on the court, which is one of the reasons why teams keep letting him go. That said, he's been off to a really good start in New York, and there was obviously a lot of excitement there. And by the way, I was 0% surprised when the move happened. And I don't even care about the trade. Like, you know, they had extra second round picks. You know, they were about to send Dennis Smith to the G League. You know, they gave up the Charlotte second round pick. The trade was totally fine. I just wonder if it kind of undercuts what this season's supposed to ultimately be about for the Knicks. And you have different players say different things about that because some people will tell you that winning games is what needs to happen more than getting, you know, a higher draft pick. I don't agree with that. But
if anybody can find the magic, though, for Derek at this stage of his career, it's Tom.
Yeah.
And Tom plays guys that he trusts. And Derek performs the best historically in his career when he's in a system that he trusts. So all these years later – they keep finding each other at different paths and moments in the road. And if there's a guy who can make it work for Derek now, it's Tom.
Well, I will say this. The Garden would have been electric this year with some of the wins that the Knicks have had, with how well Quickly has played.
I know there's some fans, I think
the Garden is going to let some people in here pretty soon. I don't know if it'll be the same, but maybe I would feel differently if the people in the Garden, but you know, I thought this was a free pass season for the Knicks. So all right, thank you, Ramona. Thank you, Mr. Nick Friedel. Thank you to Troy Farkas, who is producing this podcast. Happy Valentine's Day, one and all. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective. And we will talk to you later in the week. Oh, and real quick, we are going through a change. There's a planned change in the short term. Podcast is for years now. It's been coming out on Mondays and Thursdays. I believe starting next month, and I'll have more of an update for you, we're going to rotate it to coming out Tuesdays and Fridays. Just move each pod back one day.
Brian, the truth is none of us know what day it is anymore anyway.
Fair. All right. Thank you, everybody. Have a good week. We'll talk to you soon.